What's going on, everybody? This is Frank Blanco with another episode of No Father, No Problem with the main man Chinook Cedillo.
Hey, Frankie. We're back with another episode and with a special guest, comedian that we've seen.
Yes.
And enjoyed his stuff. And we said we got to get him on here and see what he's about. We got Juan Garcia in.
Woo! In the house.
Yep. What's going on, Juan? Wait for you, brother.
Hey, thanks. Sorry about the delay, guys.
No worries, man.
It got pretty intense after 24-hour fitness. 3-on-3 basketball games out there, man. So I apologize. But I appreciate the Mexican Coke.
Hey, you saw that? I bought you a litro. Not the smaller one, the litro.
I know. I thought you were going to give me the small one, like the little shot.
No. It's the a whole litro right there. In Mexico, that's for like two families right there. Yeah. That's a quinceañera beer.
You could get your money back if you take it back.
Take the bottle back, you know?
I think you pay more for the glass than you do for the liquid cider, right?
Yeah. Or they give it to you in that little plastic bag with the straw.
Oh, damn. Way south.
Dude, I used to live in Mexico for a little bit.
Really? What part?
Jalisco.
Oh, no shit.
Jalisco.
Crazy,
3
man.
3 hours from Guadalajara.
All right.
So, yeah.
How old were you when you came here?
Well, we were born here, but when my parents got separated, my mom took us to Mexico. So we spent part of our baby years there, you know, toddler. And then we came back and then we lived over there by USC.
Yes.
And then when my parents got divorced in 92, I went back to Mexico and I stayed there. From 8 to like 9 and a half, because I had dislocated my hip.
Yes.
So they didn't have orthopedic doctors over there, so they brought me over here. They put me on a cast for like 9 months.
Damn.
Yeah, it was like a cast with my legs spread like that and a stick in between both knees.
9 months.
That's
fucking torture.
Well, they didn't have the alcohol con marijuana rubbing you?
Hell no. No, my hip had dislocated. The bone, so whenever I would walk, the bones would rub on each other. Oh, dude, that
I was talking about that, so the Bo Jackson thing, you know?
Yeah, dude, I was like the Chepo Jackson. So after I healed up a little bit, they sent me back to Mexico.
Yes.
So I was raised another, like, what, 2 years, 3 years there. And then I came back. I came back like around like when I was in sixth grade.
Did you ever have any problems with people? Because, you know, like when you're from the States and you're Mexican, people call you a pocho, right? And I had the same situation when my mother divorced. Mm-hmm. And the second guy she married, he was from like Sinaloa. So, you know, it took us to his town to live for a while. And everyone wanted to fight me. They were like, you're a pocho. We're going to fight you. Sometimes, you know, like this grown man, bro, we're the same height, bro, let's throw down. And I'm like, fuck, you got wife and kids, fuck. I'm 8 years old, you know, what the fuck?
Hey, you're like, I was well nourished in the United States. I'm the same height as everybody here.
Seriously,
right?
Yeah, I was getting my ass kicked by grown men.
We had wigs, so I'm taller than everybody, right?
They would say, estamos del mismo tamaño, you know, like, dude, make
me con uno de tu tamaño.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was, huh?
Dude, because you had fucking all your teeth, maybe, man.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You didn't have those silver teeth they have over there.
You know? You didn't have the bling bling, dog.
It was something, but it was often, bro. Like, oh, you're the guy from the other side, you know?
Yeah.
And they wanted to fight me, man.
You're an outsider.
I was an outsider.
Well, that happens everywhere.
But it was weird. Hey, but let me ask you a question, though.
Yes.
Were they light skinned?
Some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them.
And he's dark, right?
Yes.
When I was in Mexico, since I'm like a blonde guy, they're like, no, hey, wey, I've been el güero. Like, like they treat you. Hey, Mexicans are racist, dude.
Racist as fuck, bro.
Dude, Mexicans are racist. Like, over there, like, the light-skinned guys will be like, nah, pinche indio. Es de pinche Oaxaca. Or whatever, dude.
And that's a mess separation, right? Indian and non-Indian.
Yeah. So, my experience wasn't so much people wanted to fight me. Like, it was more like people wanted to impress me because I was a light-skinned guy from the U.S.
They wanted to marry you, bro. You're like,
tengo la hermana.
You're 10 years old. They wanted to marry you off. You know, to a sister or something.
Oh, no, but there's a lot of gay guys out in Jalisco, so it was kind of like, goddamn.
Oh, shit. And then with the gay guys, otra vez, vete de culo otro tamaño, ¿verdad?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, man.
Dude, no, so, but my experience, even though it was hard for me to separate because my parents got divorced, you know, my dad was an alcoholic or whatever, so he was never really there.
Yes.
So I went with my mom, and they sent me to Mexico, and, you know, for a while, I had separation issues in Mexico. Like, oh, I hated it here, like, you know. And then the 92 riots happened, and I knew my family lived in South Central. That's because that's when where we were living.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so when I would watch television, I'd be like, oh, my brother's over there. Right. Like, I thought my family was in danger. Well, they were, but... You know, nothing happened to them.
They were probably in danger of buying a lot of good stereo equipment, right?
For cheap, bro.
For pretty cheap, man.
Yeah. No, but then when I was out there, I got to experience a lot of shit. Like, I went to a private Catholic school with rich Mexican kids.
No, yeah, sure. Were you born in the States?
Yeah.
Did you have to get fake papers to go to school there?
Nah, like, my aunt my grandma and my aunt were really religious.
Yes.
My aunt worked at that Catholic school. I forgot what she did. She was a teacher.
Yes.
Right? So she got me in.
Oh, man.
Like, she got me in, like, somehow. Like, they paid, and I, you know. That's
cool. The one thing I tell everybody, like, everybody always complains about our country. Other countries, Mexico's a third world country, and they're worse. Like, I was born here in the States. And I had to get, like, fake papers over there to go to school over there, even though you have to pay for everything. I never understood that part, you know? And
it's because you were dark, man.
I think that's what it is. And I still beat everybody's sports, you know?
I've been a shack.
Whatever sport I played, I used to carry everybody's butt. But, I mean, it could be some of that. But I had to pay for everything.
Oh, dude.
And I had to have fake papers.
I got really lucky. I mean, my family, my mom's family... my mom and my dad came from the same city, which is not El Grullo. That's where they, you know, moved to live. They used to live in this place called Tequestitlan, which was another 3 hours from El Grullo. It was closer to Colima.
Oh, really? Is that like a pueblo, a rancho?
It's a pueblo. And you want to hear something crazy? They had Chinese factories there. So, because it's close to the coast.
Yes.
Any place in Mexico close to the coast has mixture. You know, like... If you ever noticed, the coastal part of any country has the more mixed people because that's where all the slaves...
And it's more accepted, you know?
Yeah. And so, then once you get into, like... If you start to notice, the people more inland look alike more, right? Yes. Like, they look alike, but the people, like, in the coast, they're a little darker.
Multiracial, multi-religious, everything.
Dude, it's crazy.
So. My brother, uh-huh. You know, his dad, I mean, he had a short hair, so I never noticed. But my brother, if he grows his hair, he grows it like into like the dude from the Jeffersons, you know, like a mini fro. So it was a coastal area. So like you said, you know, like multiracial.
You might be like part black and you don't even know.
Yeah, I am.
Don't say from the waist down, dude.
No. Ever since that joke.
No. Or his wife would go. His wife would be like,
the garage door open.
Yeah, my blood type. I have a sickle cell trait.
Oh, wow.
And every time I, you know, put that on an application, they're like, wait a minute, that's a African American thing, you know. I'm like, well, I'm Mexican, but whatever, you know.
He's got the disease, but none of the basketball skills or none of the penis, right?
Yeah.
They got the bad, no good, right?
you probably, since you're athletic too, you know, it's like, the crazy part is that there's Afro-Mexicans.
Yes, a lot of them.
And, you know, and that's where another racism comes in, because they just barely accepted them in Mexico just recently, like 2-3 years ago. Right, but...
Or actually acknowledge them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but you know what's crazy also? That the runaway slaves from Texas, they fled to Jalisco in the Underground Railroad.
Also, I always tell everybody, when they say Pancho Villa used to go and raid these guys and their wealth, in those days, your wealth is your slaves. So he would go take their slaves and go free them down there. I mean, of course, he would take their daughters too, right? But...
Yeah.
But we're talking about slaves right now. That's another subject, you know. So he was, you know, freedom down to, you know, down south, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of brothers down there, you know, or a lot of intermixed brothers.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like my whole when we grew up in South Central, it was crazy because I started going to school at 49th Street School, which was like on past 40. We stayed in 45th and Avalon, and our school was 49th Street, and there was 51st Park, which was a get hood. Damn. Crackheads chilling all day there. So that's where I grew up, around a lot of black kids. And the Mexican kids wouldn't accept me. Like, they wouldn't hang out with me. But the black kids would. They would invite me to hang out with them.
Yeah, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, and then once the...
Go ahead. No question. Don't take this wrong, but is that because you like, they look at you like, is he an albino black kid as opposed to a light skinned Mexican?
Yeah,
that what it was?
Well, I
or think because so. You had good basketball skills.
Nah, back then I had like a, you know, because I had barely recovered from fucking
from the hip surgery.
So I had the
pigeon toe. Pip lip?
Yeah.
Dude, you had the limp.
Yeah, it was like Forrest Gump and shit. No, but you know what's funny is that during kickball, the Mexican kids wouldn't pick me and the black kids would, and be like, it's all right, Juan. We'll pick you up, even though you crippled, it's all good. This was in fifth grade, dude. So, I mean, yeah. You know, so I was already like, low self-esteem, but the fact that they accepted me, but they still clowned me, it helped me establish my sense of humor.
And your grit.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
like grit, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So, once the black kids started to accept me, the Mexican kids were like, oh, they accept them, you know? Like, so then they started talking to me, too. So it was weird how I would be able to relate to both, even yes. at a young age. And you know, maybe it's our features, because my dad, he has a wide nose and big lips, and so we always, they put it this way, when we were kids, me and my sister, they would call us ducktails, because we were Mexicans with these big ass mouths like beaks and shit.
Yeah, you know what? In elementary, I remember people calling other children that for the same reason. You know?
Yeah.
Anybody that big lips, they call them ducktails. You know, it's crazy.
They called me, huh?
So that's when you, you know, you started getting accepted. You started developing a sense of humor. Yeah. At what point did you say, you know what, I'm gonna start doing comedy?
What was that
one trigger? There was a trigger that said, fuck it, I can do this.
Well, it's crazy. I was just thinking about it recently. Well, I always think about it because, I'm the type of person, I'm a very spiritual person. Like, I believe in connection with life, the universe, and all that.
Like, there's always a sign.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I remember even as a 3-4 year old kid, 5 years old, all people, when they would see me, they'd be like, oh, you know, they'd be like, hey, let me tell you a joke. My whole life, it was like that. Like, people, hey, they have this un chiste, you know?
Yeah.
And even as a kid, like, I remember the jokes, and, you know, I remember, and we're Mexican jokes, so my uncle, he's like, hey, man, Jose, because my name is Juan Jose. He'd be like, Jose. Because my dad's family, they call me Jose. My mom's family, they call me Chepo.
Dude, in my mom's family, everybody's Jose something. I fucking hate that, man.
It's like Goodfellas. Everybody was named Paul and Marie and Vinny.
Exactly. I'm like, what the hell?
I think he's one of those too, right there.
Where's the curious?
He's Italian.
I'm like, that didn't take a lot of thought, you know? Everybody's Jose something. Like,
Paul, Petey. Oh, dude, no. So it was crazy because I just my whole life, like, I've always either made people laugh without wanting to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And then when I was like 16, because I remember, like, you know, dealing with my dad's alcoholism, and when I was a kid, like, you know, my mom would, like, because we lived by USC at the time, she would take us to right there, the museums and all, like, yes. You know, the science museums. And I remember as a kid, like, you know, even though we were in a tough situation, I would make my family laugh. My mom and my little sister, my sister and my older brother. And I would always remember, they're always laughing. They're like, hey, do that again. Do that little dance. And I'm like, because my mom would always be like, caminale como Chencho.
Yes.
And I created my own little walk, which was like the running man.
Yeah.
Like, I was walking forward, but my feet were kicking back. So I would always make my family laugh with that. So I think my sense of humor was instilled, like, genetically, because my mom is funny, and then because the world came at me with humor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Self-defense mechanism.
Yeah, and then, dude, you guys want to hear something crazier?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir. You guys are like,
I know. Yeah. Hey,
I don't want you guys to
get... The kids is too heavy.
I don't want to cry. Nah, but my mom, she told me, when I was pregnant with you, I used to have dreams that clowns would follow me. That's what she told me about when she was pregnant with me. So I was like, God damn. Like, that made my head explode. Like, what the... It was overload, you know? Yes. Because it was like... It was coming from the woman that gave birth to me. And she was telling me, dude, clowns would follow me in my dreams. You know? So it was like... It was almost like I was meant...
Like a sign, you know?
Yeah. You know? And a lot of people might think that's crazy. But the way I believe is... Like you said, everything is a sign. Everything fucking...
Everything's for a reason, you know?
Yeah. Like life... Life isn't messed up, you know? Life is okay. Everything's going to be okay, you know? So, to answer that question, I was 16 years old, and I didn't really have a lot. You know, we weren't living in a house. We were living with my aunt. So, we were always kind of, like, moving around, you know what I mean? So, one day, I just happened to watch Eddie Griffin.
Yes.
Eddie Griffin.
Cool cat, man.
Yeah, very fucking funny, intelligent, right? Like, I watched him and I was just like, fuck, you know, I want to be a comedian. I want to be like that guy. Mm-hmm. So, it's crazy how I watched that movie. Have you guys ever seen that movie Foolish that he made? It was Master P's in it. Master P's brother and Eddie Griffin. It's his, like, life on how he's, like, he's going through shit as a comedian. What you go through as a comedian.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, check it out. So anyway, I love Eddie Griffin so much that I would take his jokes from that movie and perform, like, and I'll tell them at school, in high school. Because I started when I was 16, yes. Right? So, and I would perform them like him, and people were like, God, they're like, God damn, why that shit is funny. So then fucking... Some guy watched that movie and he's like, hey, Juan, they made a fucking movie about all your jokes, dick.
You're like, oh man, I need lawyers to get these people.
I never did.
Talk about being in a tough spot, man.
Yeah.
I never did anybody else's material after that, dude.
So you started when you were 16?
Yeah, man.
That's badass, bro.
How old are you now?
35.
Oh, 35. You're still a young man.
Yeah.
Hold up,
that's badass, man.
Yeah. You're young and you're still on stage. You know,
yeah.
Where do you see yourself like in 5 years? Because I see you trying to do acting.
Yeah, I started acting like 10 months ago, and it was the best thing. I wish I would have found it, you know, when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But like I said, nothing happens.
Everything
happens at the time that it's supposed to happen. Mm. Because, you know, right now comedy is very overpopulated. Like, there's a lot of comedians. Mm-hmm. So everybody's trying to get that same spot in LA, like, dude, you know, on the road. But you also don't want to be a road comic, because if that's all you do is stay in hotels, delayed flights, you know? And that's cool for a little bit. But if you're constantly on the road, staying in these hotels.
Yeah, long term, man, I'm sure it eats you up, you know?
Yeah, and so it just, I see myself acting. And when I started doing acting, I realized that my stand up was my acting. Like, I taught myself how to act, but how to be me.
Yeah, you're acting now, your scenarios.
Yeah, so I know how to be me perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. So acting now is going outside of yourself and digging within yourself to become another character.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Have you guys seen that movie, The Green Book?
Yeah, that is the book to black people traveling, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Check it out. You guys will. I promise you guys will love that movie. well, my acting teacher. She gave us an assignment, like, okay, I'm going to send you a clip of the character that I think fits you perfectly, right? So she gave me Viggo Mortensen's character, which is Tony Vallelonga, Tony Lip.
Yes.
In that movie, he's Italian from Brooklyn. So it's funny because my whole life, all I liked is mobster movies, Italian accents. So for her to pick that character for me means that I portray that. Because she said, I picked a character that I think you're going to play at some point.
Another stepping stone on your path. Like you said, like everything's like right in front of you. You just got to follow it, right?
Yeah, and you see like...
Pretty sick, you know?
All the stuff that I did like growing up or just influences... They show up later, you know what I mean. So she's like, "Oh, yes. Play an Italian now, oh, okay?" Or you know, if they don't like the way I talk, you go take a shit. Like, it's just, it became easier for me to act because of my stand up.
Yes.
And I have an advantage because I'm in a class. Believe it or not, dude, I'm in a class with kids that are so good that you as an adult would feel intimidated, and that's how I felt in the beginning. I went in there and I was like, holy shit, like, these kids are talented. In my class, I don't know if you guys watch Fox a lot, but there's a show called The Passage. It has Zach Morris, Mark Paul Gosselaar, whatever.
Yeah, the dude from the Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. So there's a TV show right now called The Passage. That little black girl on there, she's in my class. There's going to be a new Annabelle movie coming out soon. One of those kids there is the lead actor in that.
Really?
Dude, like...
Shit.
I'm around people that are rising up.
All the way in, you know?
And then, you know, and then it goes back to the same thing with comedy. Like, I came up opening up for Jeff Garcia when Felipe Esparza was coming up. Willie Barcena. All the Latin circuit was popping off.
Yes.
That's when Gabriel and, you know, and Jeff were like... But you know, obviously Gabriel fucking took off, but everybody went their own route. So for me to be in that position with people moving up, that's contagious, you know what I mean?
It really is, man.
And I've been training myself for the past 17 years myself. So now I get to go into an acting class and it doesn't feel like I'm starting from scratch.
You have a background to it. You know what's, you know, what's going on.
And our acting teacher's the best, dude. Like, she reads you. She tells you, okay, this is a... She gives you direction. Because, you know, if you ever go on an audition and they give you direction, that means they like you. You know what I mean? If they don't see anything, any potential, they're like, oh, thanks for coming. All right, thank you.
Yeah,
like,
no raw material there.
Yeah, I told Shinoka this quote I read in a book. Mm-hmm. And it said, your imperfect childhood prepared you perfectly for the imperfect world.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like everything you talked about is a setup for the next step, you know?
Dude.
I mean, how crazy is that, you know?
Yeah, like, see, like, so I see myself on television. Like,
oh, okay.
That's cool.
You know, I see myself on television. I see myself doing more stand-up because I got on television.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because, like, that's the only thing that...
That's your foundation, you know?
Yeah. And that's the only thing that's going to shoot you through this overpopulated thing, getting on television, because then they're like, oh, hey, I see something on TV.
Yes.
And then they'll request you at the clubs. And if you're already trained at doing stand-up, see, the difference is it's... These actors that just do acting and then they don't get parts and then they come and try and do stand-up and they suck.
Hey, just because they were in a comedy sitcom, they think they could do comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not the same. Fucking that dude from Seinfeld, you know?
Yeah.
That crazy dude.
Oh, Kramer?
He just fucking bombed it, you know, and he couldn't take it.
Yeah,
you know?
because he's trained as an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes as a stand-up, people don't get it. As a stand-up, you have to have not defense, but responses to hecklers. That wasn't his best. Obviously, if he would have been doing stand-up for a long time, he
wouldn't know how that was.
Yeah, tougher skin, you know? Yeah.
He would have just been louder than the whole thing.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, as a comedian, you have the control. So if it gets loud, then I get louder.
It's your room, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Hey, how do you come up with jokes? What's your trick? And before you answer that, if you've heard of any of our podcasts, we've got 11 of them. If there's any jokes on our podcast that you like, you could take any of them. They're yours, all right? They're yours.
Nah, dude.
You could Yeah, you're not stealing them. We're offering them to you. If you say any of that real quick, all right?
No. If I get inspired by something, I won't take your jokes, man.
You know what? Hold on. I got a quick note. Carlos Mencia just said he wants to be on our next podcast.
Oh, shit. He might steal your podcast,
that's why
dude.
He wants to be on it. That's
it's all free, man.
Your notebook will be gone. What the fuck? What's going on? Where's my ideas? He blows up and shit.
Yeah, you know what?
Like son, like father, he's gonna call his.
Yeah, I'm debating on doing some open mics because I write a lot of like rant stuff.
Uh huh.
When you do open mics, did you start like that?
Nah, dude. I was very fortunate. Thank God. I thank God every day for skipping the open mics.
No shit.
I started at the Laugh Factory Comedy Camp.
Really?
Mm-hmm. At 16 and. I graduated, and after that, it was crazy. My best friend, when we lived in Pomona, he had a brother-in-law, and that's when I had met him.
Yes.
And this guy ended up being the guy that took me to all my shows when I was 16. So he introduced me to Jeff Garcia, and they were doing comedy out at this place called The Galaxy in Inglewood. So they took me there. I watched the comedy, and then... You know, I asked them if I could get up, and they're like, hey, well, you know, show up at this place called Casa Latina. Casa Latina, Casa Latina was on Garvey and Muscatel and Rosemead.
Yeah, yes. I'm familiar with that spot.
Okay, so the crazy shit about this place was that there was a gang in El Monte, a gang in San Gabriel, a gang in fucking Pico Rivera.
And that's like the middle of everything.
Oh, my God. And they would all come on a Tuesday night, pack this place out and enjoy the shit out of the comedy show, dude. But as soon as that comedy show was over, fucking shit. War.
Run.
Yeah, what the hell? Were they taking food stamps to get in? What was it, EBT to get in?
Dude, they must have been the fucking the shot callers because these dudes showed up. Dude, we had every gang run through there, dude. Like the Mongols, all those guys, dude. We used to do comedy at this place called the Wild Coyotes. You guys remember Wild Coyotes? Yeah.
Beverly and
it changed so many times.
Oh, yeah. Now it's El Pescador. Yes. It had stopped. I'm glad.
You know what? I tell people, I go, that land there is cursed because there's nobody there that could make anything work there. You know, you're going to have to open up like a post office there so they can be there forever. Yeah, or a welfare office. Those are the only places that ever stay in business.
It never keeps a name, you know?
Yeah, it never just keeps a recycling.
Urgent care or something.
It's just, I you know what it is? Like, I used to frequent that place for Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a sports fan. And there was always fights, and there's always a shitload of cops.
Oh, sheriffs.
So you got a negative versus a negative. Yeah. I mean, like, it's very difficult for anybody to get out of their own skate.
Oh, dude. So those were my open mics. I was going up against fucking hostile ass crowds. Like, dude, there was this one chola that liked me there. This one chola that liked me, and then she would always hug me, dude. And then one time, she didn't hug me, and I was like, okay, she's not hugging. And I was like, I remember I was like 19, and then I was like, oh, let me go hug her. And then I hug her, and some dude comes out of nowhere, so you're hugging other motherfuckers?
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I never hugged her again, dude.
It's part of the show, sorry.
She was hot, though.
Oh, man.
Was it worth ass beating though?
That's
hell
rough,
nah.
Man, that's rough.
So those were my open mics. But to answer that question, I skipped the open mics because I was good enough to open up for Jeff Garcia. Nice. He gave me my first opportunities, and I just went from those places to the improvs because I was this kid, you know.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, you know what? I hear, you know, we talked to other comics, you know, Geeko, and we talked to them, and there was like, you know what? The business we're in is hard to have a relationship with. You know, with the woman, you know, it's hard. Yeah. Do you find that as well as, you know, because of the business you're in, it's hard to have a girlfriend,
like long-term relationships?
Well, you know what, dude? It all depends on the female,
mm-hmm.
and it all depends on your effort while you're pursuing your dream. You know, because the girl that I'm with now, we've been together 3 years. We broke up for like 5-6 months, but while I was gone and still doing my thing, I still miss that. You know, I miss the relationship I had with her, with her kids. So it's almost crazy because it became like my little family, the little family that I didn't have with my mom and my dad.
Yes.
So when I met her and you know, I got to know her kids, you know, the smallest one, 2-year-old, it just kind of brought out this love that I've never felt. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, like I've never felt that love anywhere else. So I had an attachment to that. So, you know, even though we were broken up, I still went ahead and pursued my thing.
Yes.
So I think sometimes if you really love a person, you give them space. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you're with somebody for a long time and it just...
You're cluttering each other, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so you need to reset and realize what's important. So what was important was just my change of attitude about the things in my life. You know what I mean? Like, yes. It was like, okay, at first I blamed it, okay, on my relationship. It wasn't my relationship. It was just my attitude. So if you have a certain attitude about your relationship, then you might think that's what's wrong. And you might dump a chick that really loves you. You know what I mean? So it's only tough if you're constantly on the road.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah. Dude, you know how many temptations there is on the road?
I can imagine, bro.
No, tell us.
I can imagine.
Yeah, bro. We can imagine.
So
yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, it's so easy to cheat on the road.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and... You know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it depends on what you want. If you feel you can manage that, then, you know, have a relationship and do stand-up, cool. But sometimes women want your attention, dude. I mean, women like attention, right?
They need it.
Yeah.
And, no, I get it. How do you identify yourself as? And before you answer that, I'll tell mm-hmm. you, I'll explain to you how I expect that, I'm asking the question. Mm-hmm. I ride a bike.
Okay.
I'm a family man, and I ride my bike on the weekend. I'm not a cyclist, and I also have a family. I have a family man that rides a bike. Are you a comedian who has a girlfriend, or are you a family man who does comedy on the side? How do you identify yourself?
I'm a comedian, and...
Is that your number one? Is that your driving force?
Like priority?
And then on your way there... You're hoping you grab a family as you go towards that destination.
Well, I mean, just based on how things have happened, like, I don't have to really ask for them, you know, like, because she, like, she always wanted to work things out. So it depends on your chick, too, you know. If she believes in you, then, and you know, which I think my girlfriend believes in me.
You can get over stuff, you know.
Like, yeah, she allows me to go do stand up, but the rest is up to me, right? If I'm a cheat, if I'm gonna do more than what I'm supposed to do. So yes. I've been in a lot of relationships. I've messed some up because I've been scared that I was gonna get hurt, so I pushed people away because I felt they were gonna cheat on me or I wasn't good enough to love. So. Sometimes, like I said, and that's what I'm saying, like, sometimes it's your attitude. It's not so much that the relationship gets in the way, you know what I'm saying? It, like, sometimes it's your attitude about how you want to manage these things, you know what I mean? Because some comedians perform and they take their girls, you know, every other show or whatever, like, come with me, you know, if it's like that.
Yes.
But at the same time, you don't always want to have your girl there, because then that kind of... makes other girls like, yeah, you know what? Like, I don't want to go say hi to him and his girlfriend gets bothered.
No, even the guys that go on the road with you, even they feel like they gotta keep a distance because of that, you know?
I mean, yeah.
It just makes it awkward for everybody.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Everybody around
there. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes you get dudes that'll try and hit on your chick while you're up on stage.
Shit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah, dude. Motherfucking comedians. Hey, man, Juan ain't shit, man. You know Juan ain't shit. Like,
damn.
Oh, shit. Fuck yeah, dude. So it's like, it's hard to manage a relationship, but at the same time, you have to, like, my thing is, when I go do my stand-up, that's my job. And And the way I prepare for my shows is, you know, I'll medicate, I'll drive to my show, and I'll fucking get into my zone listening to fucking corridos.
Oh.
Fucking rap. Yeah. Dude, I blow people's minds in Hollywood because it's like the accordion, badass accordion thing. Yeah. And out of nowhere, Tupac, and people are like, what the fuck?
Hey, I do that shit too, man.
You know what? People don't understand like, that. It's people exactly like, the same thing. It's what exactly are you? The same thing, just different languages.
Yeah.
It's gangster rap.
Different delivery.
Mexican gangster rap is what it is.
It's a different delivery, yeah. But it's the same thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like. But when I'm listening to corridos and the guy's talking about like el cuerno de chivo and there's a family, I turn it down. I'm like, there's fucking kids.
Just like rap, being like, yeah, shit, yeah, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Right before they say the N-word, I mean, I don't want to turn this.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. You know what? I think we all can relate to that. You know what? We come to the part of the episode, and I don't know if you're familiar with how we operate, but we always try to talk. Well, mm-hmm. We're from East Los Angeles.
Okay.
We grew up right in the center. And Frank and I were privileged to eat at a lot of really, really great places. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew the ins and outs, the places where they only opened on weekends or they didn't have a license or they had an F on the window.
Where the fuck?
And we still went there, you know? We were privileged to eat those places. So we like to talk about them and you know, put that out. So today, Frankie's got the restaurant, the location of the week.
Yes, I mean everybody around these lows should know this place.
Yes, sir.
But everybody else should know this place. We call it El Mercadito.
Oh, I know El Mercadito.
First Street, you know, 3425 East First Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they cover all the bases, man. Whether you're a seafood guy, Mexican food place guy. Or a mariachi guy, I mean, which is, that's me, man. I go listen to mariachi everywhere.
You know what, though, Frankie? I used to tell a lot of people, because I was, I don't want to say I was ignorant, but I was maybe a little prejudiced, because, you know, prejudice just means you judge before you.
Yes.
Because I remember going there and then saying, you know what, the food isn't that good. People go there because of what it is, the place. You know, people want to say I was at El Mercadito, even though the food wasn't good.
Yes.
And people, you know, I always say, oh yeah, that's for the gabachos. That's for the white people.
Like the tourist area.
Exactly, for the tourists. And, you know, we grew up, how far away? A half a mile away?
Yes.
For, 20 years? So I tell people, I go, that's for the white people, because that's who they accommodate, you know?
Yeah, they cater to that, you know. Or not white people, or the Americanized everybody, you know?
Yeah, everybody lighter than us, right?
But I see what you mean. Their food is not the greatest, but they have so many stands, so many angles on different food. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's good enough, you know. Like it's, I tasted different restaurants today, and they were good, you know. Like, dude.
Yeah, you know, you, when you go there, you're not in Tijuana. But you're like 80% of Tijuana.
Pretty much.
It's like Tijuana light is what you mean.
It smells like the pipes over there.
Yeah, exactly, man. Don't drink the water. You know, one of those. You know, but
Fanta, it's Fanta.
I was telling everybody, I go, you know what Tijuana smells like? You know what, you know, Pino Sol? You know, the that's
yes.
What it smells like. You know you're in Tijuana when everything's like Pino Sol, you know?
Like Fabuloso?
There you go, Fabuloso. You know what? That's what I was trying to get at. Thank you very much.
Hey,
man, you call me on that. Thank you, sir. I was trying to say Fabuloso, he did. Pinche coronas.
Damn.
But you know what, though? And it's changed. It's changed. You sent me some pictures, and I saw some pata de mula there.
Ooh.
Yes, which is...
Those were illegal in
I hear
places.
It's illegal, but one of the small stands, they sell it on the weekends. But you have to ask for it. It's not on the menu. I asked for it, and she's like, what do you want to know? And I told her, I light my ass off. I told her, I'm bringing my mom to lunch. And she likes it, so I need to find out where they sell it, you know? So she told me, come on the weekends. We sell it on the weekends, you know? One of the little seafood stands in there.
Did you ask her for like a 20-sack of pata de mula?
Dude, there used to be a cevichero over there at a car wash in Slauson. Mm-hmm. He was like a big America fan. And his whole van was America. But, dude, that dude would sell some good pata de mula.
Oh, dude.
It's like they're on Slauson. I forgot the other street, but, dude, it's...
Como dicen, la pata de mula está buena cuando está bien tronadora.
Yeah.
When you bite it and it fucking crunches at you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fucking good. So, you know what? We come to the end of our first section, and we'll be right back. And we're back with segment two of our podcast with Juan Garcia.
Yes, sir.
And today, now we're gonna start talking about Super Bowl, and I'm on the shit end of the stick because I won, and not just because I won. What happened was last week we had Alfred Robles,
yes,
and we were here, and I waited for that just that perfect sweet spot for them to get all riled
what a,
up.
What a dig, bro! You set us up, man.
Yeah, I set them up. You know what it is? Is you know when you bet with
your heart.
No, you don't. You bet with your head, because the people who bet with their heart are gonna lose. Hey, you ever see your heart make a good decision?
Never.
I got married because of that. So when they were here and they were talking, they're like, yeah, the Rams this, the Rams that. And I'm looking at the fucking playbook and I'm like, hey, Vegas has a freaking
New England favorite.
I'm like, what's wrong with these dudes?
And I told you a week before, too, that that my money would be on New England, my heart would be with the Rams.
Exactly.
And when he bet me, I'm a sucker. Like, I'll take it, bro, $50.
I waited for that.
I stole you, bro.
I waited for that moment for them to be like, yeah, we're going to win. And I'm like, yes, sir. Hey, I got $50 on it. So, Frankie, do you have my $50 today?
No, man. I'll get you next week, bro. Yeah,
all right. So, we're going to wait for next week. For the two other losers that are out here,
Gabby
and Kiko. Hey, where's my $50, dude? I don't want to send Jules and Vincent to your house to go pick it up, right?
Break your thumbs.
How did you see the Super Bowl? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying it was boring, but
if you know the sport, man, it's good. I love the game.
You know what? I agree with him because this is the way I related it. I'm a big boxing fan, and I'm one of those boxing fans that even like boring fights, which people call boring fights. When you see, like, say Mayweather fight a guy that's exactly like Mayweather, and they have good defense, and no one gets hit, the way you see it is, you're defending yourself against somebody who has been trained to hit you for the last 20 years, and you can still defend yourself. There's an art to that, and people got to understand there's an art to that. Well, the Super Bowl, they got two teams that were defending themselves so well that nobody could score. There's also an art to that. People got to appreciate that. People got lost.
They got a scheme against it, man.
Yeah, you know? People got lost in that, oh, it's only good if they score. No, it's good also if they don't score someone is doing something right.
Yeah.
You know, so I enjoyed it for that reason.
Yeah, one thing I noticed was they really did a good job on stopping Aaron Donald, what's his name?
Yes.
Yeah, right? From what I saw, they were doubling him the whole night. No one else could get through. And when they did get through, but it took a lot of hard work.
Yes, and Donica Sue got through a few times.
Yeah. And
but like you said, he had to work for it.
I mean, Brady always gets the best players. It's like the Yankees, you know? You're not going to have a mediocre team ever. Like, it's always going to be like the high rated players. It's almost like he's the face of the NFL. So the Rams are exciting to watch and they're very talented, but it's weird to me how with all those superstars, no one stepped it up.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it's either the Patriots, it could be, you know, taken two ways. It's the Patriots were that good, or they fix the way that things are run.
Well, the way I see it is the Patriots have always been accused of stealing the other team's plays and the other team's verbiage for their plays, right? Because I call the Patriots the Lance Armstrongs of football because
they lost the testicle?
Well, they out-cheat the system, you know?
Yeah.
Like other teams are allowed to record your opposition. The Patriots record the opposition plus they record the facial the calls, you know. So if you don't change your play calls by the name, they got them down already. So therefore, like they do a little bit more, you know. They the Patriots usually have a lot of little receivers like quick, like Edelman when he was the MVP.
Yeah.
And when they got accused of disinflating balls, everybody says that's no big thing. But if you're a little dude with little hands, you need a ball to be deflated just a bit so you could grip it, you know? I mean, it's just little things that where they always, like, they outdid the opposition, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, they're either geniuses or they're, you know, Lance Armstrongs of NFL, you know?
Yeah.
So, oh, well. I mean, you're never going to beat that, you know?
I mean, What can we say, dude? I mean,
they just keep winning.
Look at who our president is.
Oh, I know.
It's just the world. You don't even know what to believe anymore. You know what I mean?
True.
Like,
very true.
You could look at that Super Bowl and be like, yeah, you know, the Rams didn't do good. Were they told not to do good? Like, it's almost like patriotic people want the Patriots to win. Like in 2001, remember when the whole Tuck rule thing?
Yes.
That's when 9/11 happened. And who won? Fucking the Patriots.
Oh, man.
So now fucking Donald Trump is in fucking office. So, you know, it's like.
People still keep winning.
It's almost like a big reality show that we're living in, you know, because people in LA, the thing with us in LA, man, like, we're so spoiled. We're so fucking spoiled. Like, we have everything. And we're still assholes, dude, right? Yeah,
yeah. And sometimes, we're still complaining.
Yeah, sometimes it's just the karma that comes with the city. Like, hell yeah, we have the Dodgers, the Kings, the Lakers, the Clippers. Dude, we have so many teams. The Rams, the Chargers.
Tijuana.
That's not too far either.
Yeah, we're 2 hours away from Tijuana.
You got beach, mountains,
Los
and Tijuana.
Cholos from Tijuana.
And Tijuana, you know what I mean? Like, everything's just so close.
We have forests, and it's like, we should just, it's okay if our teams don't win. We want them to win, but we have so much more than just our teams, you know?
I think we get over it faster than everybody else.
Yeah, right? Because we're just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, plus our fucking weather is fantastic. You know what I mean? I would hate, like, our weather is like 80 degrees and we win and they got the opposing teams that are like at -4 and they lose. You know what I mean? It's easier for us to get over it than them. You know, we'll go out and have a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Well, they're falling apart, you know?
But you know what's crazy? That this state has so many people that there's so many fans of opposite teams here too that live here. Like, I've met so many Cowboy fans here.
I noticed that.
Pittsburgh fans. Like, dude, where do these Eagle fans come from? It's like they just come out of nowhere.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's crazy.
No, dude. as a UPS guy, I worked in the Hollywood area, mm-hmm. which is tourists, mm-hmm. all tourism. And people would, December, they would come up to me like, we're wearing sandals in December. We're moving here, bro. We're coming over here, man. Like, they're vacationing here. And then they see how it is, and they tell me, like, hey, we're planning on moving over here, bro.
Yeah, you know what it is? They come over here, and they're like, man, it's December. I'm wearing sandals. These fucking tacos are fantastic. You know, where else are we going to fucking go?
Man.
You know, they're, what the fuck?
If our teams lose, fucking let's go get tacos, dude.
You know, whatever, you know, what it is, you know?
You know, you could beat the fucking Raiders, but or you could beat the Rams, but our fucking food beats yours any freaking day of the week.
You see how important the Super Bowl was that we just fucking, who gives a shit about it, you know?
Yeah, we're like, fuck the chowder.
Yeah.
The clam chowder, you know?
Dude, I mean, I don't know. How do you guys feel about or think? Do you think that sports are fixed, or do you think that people control what?
You know what? For me, it depends on the sport. Like boxing, because there's only a few people involved in it, it can be fixed. Tennis, you know, when it comes to individual sports, all it takes is for like one boxer to perform at 80%. To lose, to change the whole outcome of the game, you know? But when you say you have baseball or, you know, football, it's a little harder to change that because if you're not performing, they'll take you out of the game, you know? It might be a little harder.
Yeah.
But, like I got to refer to Frankie. I know because Frankie's right now, he's about to fall apart. Like, he's like, tag me in. What do you think, Frankie? Because I know you have something to say about this.
I just think team sports, I think they're guided. You know, like, it seems like to me, like, the Super Bowl, every time the Rams were about to take control of the game, like, flags started popping up. So, I mean, like, I think they're guided to manage it into a climax, you know, like,
yeah.
To make it a tight game at the end. So, I mean, that's my theory. And at the end, whoever can control their mind the most, you know, like the Saints, the Rams' previous game, they fell apart. When they didn't get that call, everybody keeps crying about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so if I think they're guided into a climax to it's a tight game, you know.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know. It's
well, because you remember that I saw the 60 Minutes, that episode of that referee who used to bet on games.
I think it was Donahue.
Yeah. So he would bet on games,
Yes.
And he would have a meeting with all the other officials, and they'd be like, okay, who don't we like in each team? And it was always Allen Iverson. Or they always had their favorites, and they would always favor certain players. And, you know, and then they got caught up because the Gambino family found out that they were making money. So they went in on it, and fucking, he said no, and they sent him a list of all his family members.
Yeah, oh, man.
And then they're like, no, we're going to get in this. And, dude, put it, the FBI was saying that the mob made so much money, they couldn't even tell us how much money they made.
Wow.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, dude.
Those buttons are tough, you know?
Yeah.
If they press those buttons, bro, you can't say no, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're screwed, you know?
No. Yeah, so I think right now, before we finish this, you want to say that was the Juan Garcia said that, not us. We have nothing to do with that. So if anyone's listening that could fucking hurt us, it was Juan. I want to make sure it was, they knew it was you, yeah, right?
That's how crazy that is. Like yeah. Man. For somebody to send you a list of your whole family, you know, like,
wasn't us.
Dude, it was just a movie, now.
Man. Man, but yeah, I remember that. I remember that controversy with the so, shaving points and all that.
Hey, I saw that. Saw you on Instagram. You're a Vampiro fan.
Oh, yeah, dude! I honestly,
what's that? Is that your drink there?
Well, that place is a smoothie place, and I would go in there and get the choco banana and add granola. So, but I tried the Vampiro, and before my acting class, I would always drink Starbucks or Coffee Bean, and then after that, I'd just be, like, tired, and all
the crash, you know, the crash.
Yeah, and then the Vampiro, it just gives me energy, and I started drinking it. Well, you know what's crazy? My grandma, rest in peace, she used to always drink it, and she would always be like, oh, yeah, she's like, cuando tomas esto? You pee red, and then I started drinking it, and you do pee. your urine is almost reddish. Like yellow. Yeah, yellowish red. Like it cleans. It purifies your blood.
You gotta try it, man.
Dude, try, and that's why they call it a vampiro, because it's like it purifies your blood. It gives you energy.
You know what? I drink that too. There's a juice spot up the street, and I have a fatty liver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my liver is fatty, and whenever I eat like a lot of menudo or pork stuff, my liver will start to hurt, and I can feel it. I can feel it, and what's good for a fatty liver or for like a bad liver is cruciferous vegetables. Mm-hmm. You know, so I take the pills, but whenever I drink Vampiro, that fucking works out, man. I drink that, and it alleviates the pain. You know,
yeah.
It helps out a lot. So when I saw you drinking, I'm like, oh, that's fucking pretty good. And I was thinking, I go, I wonder if I can make a Bloody Mary out of that. Throw a little vodka in there. Hey, kind of like even it out, you know? Yeah, kind of even it out, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it has a lot of sugar. So, you know, like, I don't know if the salt and the sugar would kind of go together, but you should try it. I mean,
well, you know, let's we'll find out.
Experiment.
What happens. Let's experiment.
Yeah.
Hey, Taxi, you know what? You're a stand-up comic.
Okay.
Yes, you're supposed to say yes. I am.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. It sounds like I was accusing you. You're like, really? You're a stand-up comic. When you do your taxi, are you like a 1099 guy?
Well, not really, because I don't really make enough money through comedy,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get taxed for. Because, I mean, you got to make, what, like $20,000 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Or now $25,000 to get taxed. So if I don't make more than that,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, you got nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a regular job. You know, I also do Lyft. But when I was doing comedy full time, it was all comedy. But sometimes you don't always get gigs, you know. You don't want to go through that stress. Like, especially if you want to keep your place, you know?
Yes.
Like, you got to be smart. Like, it has to make sense. Or you really have to book certain roles that get you that money. Or you be, you know? So, like, unless you're making a lot of money, then you really don't have to file.
You don't really have to file. Right? Yeah. Taxes? You filed already?
No, I haven't filed, though. But, you know what? I always wait till the last minute, man.
What?
Well, because I pay.
Oh, did you pay?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, you know what? I mean, I do pay, but I pay like $3,000 less now with this new
law,
presidential guy. You know.
Yeah.
Than the previous, but I mean, I didn't mind paying more taxes and have people that would never have healthcare, you know. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mind that, you know, because I mean I'm a donator guy, yeah. You know, so I'm always donating money to everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I mean I did my taxes for my job, and I mean it was a cool amount, and I'm gonna use it to pay my credit card or whatever.
Yes.
You know.
Okay. You know what? Because I went to do my taxes. The guy goes, "Hey, it's gonna take a while to get your money back because Trump's holding taxes back because he wants the wall, or else he's not gonna fucking give us back our money."
When did he say that? When it was shut down?
Hold on, that's what my tax guy said. He goes, "So it's gonna take a while. Usually you get it back in 2 weeks. It might be 3 or 4 weeks." And I'm like, "Oh, well, why?" He goes, "Well, fucking Trump's gonna hold back some money." I'm like, "Well, what the fuck? You know, to build the wall, you know?" Well, that's what he told me. I don't know if it's true because, you know, I recently got some money back.
It could have been just bullshitting, right?
Yeah, but it would have been some bullshit, yeah.
Well, because I did my taxes and she didn't say that.
No?
Yeah, like, mines are already sent. I clicked on refund status. It says have been received.
Sweet.
It's just waiting to get approved. Yeah. And
so I'll wait till the last week, bro.
Dude, I fucked up, though. I accidentally gave the wrong account number.
Oh.
Yeah, so, but I called Chase, and I was like, "Hey, so this is what I did," and she's like, "Don't worry, we won't deposit it if the name doesn't match." Mm-hmm. So, then they're like, "Just call us that day that you expect it, and we'll reroute it to your," I was like, "Thank fucking God, dude, I was fucking..."
I know somebody's like, gonna come up, huh?
Yeah, dude. Oh, hallelujah.
I know, dude.
You know what, I was talking to my uncle, and he goes, I told him, I go, "You know what, Trump's holding back taxes because, they're not building his wall." And, you know, my uncle's really big. He's more Mexican than I am. Mm-hmm. And, he told me, he goes, "You know what? It's okay." I go, "What do you mean it's okay?" He goes, "Because, well, you know what? If they build the wall..." Well, you know, a lot of comedians have said this. And I'm not saying this is a joke. I'm saying this because it's fucking true. If they build the wall, who's building the wall? Fucking Mexicans are, right? Mm-hmm. And when they do build the wall, I think those are going to be great photo opportunities. You know, to see a Mexican building the wall...
To keep Mexicans out
and with Mexicans fucking on the other side of the wall. You know, you're fucking building a wall, there's Mexicans on the other side, like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing?" You know, gonna be Mexicans. I go, that's gonna be fucking, I don't know who is a photographer, but that's a great picture to fucking take. You know what I mean? That's gonna be like conflict against conflict. That's gonna be great. I would love to,
before the chingazos, bro.
Yeah, before the chingazos. But that'd be a fucking great picture to fucking take, you know, to see that shit, you know. And I was saying, who takes those pictures and who benefits from that? You know, that'd be great.
Yeah. I think some drone shots would be fucking cool.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Anybody would.
It would probably be the safest shot.
Oh yeah.
You know, for somebody to take pictures of all this, all this chaos
the
or
conflict,
like,
the conflict going on there. To see a Mexican building a wall against another fucking Mexican, you know.
Yeah, so the drone's probably the only way to go, you know?
Yeah.
At least on the safe side, you know?
Damn, they're going to want to build the wall down at Central America, man. The walls are just going to keep fucking going.
I believe it.
Yeah, because Mexico is like the U.S., dude. Have you ever been to Mexico? They have Home Depot, KFC. Like, we're like a, it's like a, the U.S. in Spanish. Because they have corporations over there. Walmart.
I hate going down there and looking for Mexican stuff, and everybody's trying to sell you American stuff. Like, no, I live over there.
Ya vine de allá, güey.
Yes, I want to buy, like, some pottery crap, you know, like, something, you know?
Or you go to Home Depot, and you're like, is it going to be Mexican in front of the Home Depot, or white guys, you know?
Vamos al Hobby Lobby, güey.
Yeah, oh, no, over there, they're Haitian, you know? You know, they have all these...
In Tijuana, right? There's a lot of Haitians right now, right there?
You know, when you're crossing the border, the guy's selling you the candies, the churros. There's a lot of Haitians on there. You're like, "Hey, this guy looks a little dark, and his hair looks a little kinky." You know, you see a lot of that.
But yeah. It's
and
cool.
That's recent too.
Yeah, I like to speak Spanish. You know, it's cool as hell, man. You know, yeah. I'm saying, you know, little man. You know,
damn, dude.
Mexico needs more athletes, bro.
Hey Juan,
yes.
Where do you see yourself in 30 years?
30 years.
Damn.
Shit.
You know,
30 is a big
probably
number.
Dead.
Well, no, not you. And I'll answer first. I'm like, what is this? I go, fuck, I hope I'm alive, you know?
You never know what's going to happen, dude. Like, in 10, 15 years, like, this fucking world might just be
fucked up.
So let's make it 20 years. Where do you see yourself? What's like your end goal? Like I wanna be walking out of my house in a fucking beach having some coffee somewhere. What's
just having a house, like being that actor that I wanted to be, and then coming out in certain roles and having my own home and a nice car.
When you see yourself as an actor, like everybody says, I want to be an actor. Who do you see yourself as? You know, who do you want to be like? You know, well, Jimmy Smith or Hispanic actor like that. You know, who do you see yourself?
I don't know. I probably see myself more as a comedic guy.
Yeah, like the comic relief of a movie.
Yeah, or just like one of those roles where the whole the funny Italian guy. Thing. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Like the good thing about at least your complexion, your look, you can't be attached to any race. You know.
Yeah.
Like sorry to interrupt you. And like for me, you say I'm dark. So, like at work, every time everybody has when groups of races get together and talk trash to each other, every time I want to get like my 5 cents in, they're like, "No, you don't count because we don't know what the hell you are," So I'm like, "What the hell?" It's a plus, A lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I don't think I want to be like a certain actor. Like, I think I just, if they give me a role, I'm gonna become whatever role they give me. I've say they want me to play a Jewish guy, then I have to study what a Jewish guy, so you basically you're gonna become what they're asking you to become, and it's coming from you. So
yes,
I could just say what actors I like, but I can't say that I want to be like them. Like I could learn from them, but then I have to create these characters out of my own self.
Yes.
Because it's what they're going to get offered. I like Washington, but you're never going to play this. I watched it because exactly. You might play like Mars, like the dude from the Nike commercial, what I mean? Spike Lee,
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? That's that is true, because you gotta know what your limitations are and what your abilities are. So that's what you gotta grow off of,
Yeah, and that's why the Green Book is good, because the guy that plays Tony Vallelonga, the Italian guy, he's Danish. So for him to have stepped into a character outside of, because he came out in the movie The Ring, The Lord of the Rings and all that.
Yes.
So think about that. The jump from that fantasy to
the like
true story. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I want to be one of those actors. Like, not so much.
Yeah, we have a large range,
Yeah, because that's exactly what they look for.
You never get typecast into one character,
Yeah, like think of like Chris Farley. Like, yeah, he was funny, but he could only play
the same guy.
Tommy Boy. That's the only movie I ever watched. Tommy Boy.
I know, so do I.
What's it called? Beverly Hills Ninja. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I want to be able to be the funny guy that I started as, but also jump into a role where I am serious.
That's cool.
You know what I mean? And that's where I dig deeper into my own feelings to play that. Like,
yeah, you know how you say, like, a lot of people get typecast? A lot of times these people are the same people in life. Like the Anna Faris lady. Mm-hmm. I did her to her house, and she's the same person in life that she's in all these characters. Yeah. And then this cat used to come out in the show iCarly, like the goofy brother.
Yeah.
And he's the same person in life, like real high energy, like borderline tweaker,
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. Like they're out of their life and they play the same person in everything they do,
Yeah. So that was Chris Farley. Like, the tripped out thing about him was that most of the stuff he said in the movie was just him being him, and they just allowed him to be him.
Yeah.
And that's very easy, but what I'm saying is then you just kind of get labeled as the funny guy, and when you play something different,
yes,
people don't take that serious unless you really convince them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm aiming at, so.
Yeah, you know what? Like, you got Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, I remember he was a comedian. He was a comedian, and he's come out in that show where it was a Bosom Buddies. Remember that TV show where he was a girl to live in an apartment? And then he ended up flipping over to, like, serious roles. And we believed it. We believed it. We accepted it, you know, because he was that good. You know?
Forrest Gump, like, oh, look at man. That. Yeah. Like,
that's one movie I watch over and over.
Dude,
and over.
I could watch, dude, at any moment, right? Like, it yes. doesn't matter what part you just.
And I'm a history buff. Yeah. So, you know, that movie, I'm like, damn, bro.
That doesn't heaven. Make sense, right? That
I'm in heaven, sense. Yeah, with the history, you know, like it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, when you go through the channels, you're like, all right, I can watch Forrest Gump. You go to the next channel, the one with the.
Be like Green Mile, all right?
Yeah, Green Mile.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, those movies you dude, just watch. Dude, you know?
Shawshank Redemption.
Like you said, whatever part is on, like
Casino, you're on. Casino, oh, Goodfellas.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like you're all in right from the get go. Yeah, you know?
It doesn't matter what part. Even Roadhouse. That you'll watch Roadhouse. The credits. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah, you watch Roadhouse. You're like, I can watch Roadhouse for a while.
Yeah. You know another one that I liked, The King of New York.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that movie.
DiCaprio, right?
Huh?
DiCaprio.
No. That's The Departed. I think. No, King of New York. Lawrence Fishburne's in it. And then that one actor. Damn, dude. It's like a... It's, you guys should check it out.
I gotta
King
check
of
it
New
out.
York.
Yeah, we watch Pulp Fiction a lot, man. Like, you know, like...
I was watching that
today. Reservoir Dogs. You know, like I don't know, modern...
like 80s, 90s.
Huh? Yeah, 80s, 90s.
Well, Juan, we're getting towards the end. And we want to thank you for coming and joining us.
Hey, man.
Hey, you know what, though, too? Usually when we're going through our podcast, you know, we stick to a certain program. Towards the end, we can just kind of veer off and say whatever we want. Hey, you know what? I reached out to you and like, hey, Juan, you know, you want to join us on the podcast? You were fucking real cool about it, dog. You were like, yeah, I'll make it. No problem, dog. I mean, you were fucking really cool about just fucking. I should have asked you to help me move. Like, hey, why don't you help me move?
Hey, we appreciate you, man. Yeah,
dude,
we appreciate,
a lot.
Thanks for coming through, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming through and give us... Plus, you know, we're the little guys, and we got how many of you? You're podcast number 12, dude.
Hell yeah!
And no one knows that you're fucking. Man. You're at the beginning of this whole.
Let's
thing.
Let's take off from here.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, you know. And you know what though? Even if we don't make it, we're still just gonna keep on doing it until, like I said, until our wives don't let us anymore, and until his liver goes out. Because my liver's already out, so I can't go out twice. So
just drink out. A Vampiro, man.
I got a
little vodka.
You guys should have Vampiro. Yeah. Vodka and Vampiros.
Vampiro and vodka, man. Yeah. You know, I'm a Bloody Mary guy, as you can see, man.
Yeah, dude. We tore that thing up. but yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. I mean, you know, I'm always cool. Dude, I'm like I helped the lady move, and she paid me $100. Like, wherever that I feel like I should be, that's where I go. You know what I mean? Like,
we're not giving you $100.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh, for real?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Hey, we bought you 2 Coca-Colas in Mexico, right?
I'm gonna recycle the bottles.
Yeah. You'll get your $100 for the bottles. Huh?
Yeah. No, but what I'm saying is like, you know, I'm always cool. I always like being on stuff. You know what I mean? Because like, I guess now that I'm older and more mature, like, I like listening to people or sharing my story.
Yes.
Like, and this is another way of putting it out there, you know what I mean?
No, like, it's a great story, man, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I always like sharing what I've been through, you know? We didn't cover everything, but we'll save it if I come back. Or,
yes.
But, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed myself here, and I appreciate you guys having me.
No. Hey, thank you for joining us, and, you know, we would love to have you back. And, hey, well, you know what, though? Like I said, you know, there's no time to... Hey, why don't you drink?
Because
you know what? There's always great stories... Why people don't drink.
Well, my dad was an alcoholic, and I was like, yeah.
So
but you, I smoke weed.
No, that's a whole different animal. I would rather smoke weed than drink because, well, they drug test me.
Yeah.
But I think smoking weed is better than fucking drinking. For sure. Because, but so you've never drank?
Well, I've drank, like, I used to drink 40s with my buddies, but it just never really got me drunk. Like, it was something like I didn't really have fun with. Because I felt like I don't have control over myself at some point. You know what I mean? And with weed, it also has its moments where you're just like, dude, I'm so high. But with weed, you learn the less I hit it, the less I'm going to trip out.
Yes.
If you're like smoking blunt, a whole blunt to the head, your body... Some people have a high tolerance, but if you don't have one, you'll start to panic because your body and your brain aren't, and you know,
in sequence, you know.
Yeah. So with weed, I just learned like smoke a little, see where it takes you. If it doesn't take you where you want to go, smoke a little more, and then leave it at that. Because when I smoke,
I could go to the gym and really focus on my workout. Even when I play ball, I focus on what I'm doing. I get into it. Yes. With alcohol, I could never do that. With alcohol, I'd be like saying stupid things. Sometimes you say shit that your brain is thinking, it just says it. But right?
Yes, true. Very
and
true.
And with weed, you could go to sleep and wake up and, oh, you're not high no more. With alcohol, you could go to sleep and wake up drunk again, you know?
Yes,
yeah. So either drunk or with a bad hangover, which is worse.
Yeah, like, that's one thing I never liked. The fact of doing that and then waking up like, fuck, I hate life, you know? I never liked that energy. I always like weed has always helped me get inspired or just kind of go into a mindset where it's like I'm seeing my future with positivity.
Yes.
And sometimes, don't get me wrong, like you'll go into your dark moments where you think of something that makes you depressed. But if you're able to overcome that, it expands your mind because you're dealing with all the things in your mind.
Yes.
So once you control it and you start to think positive, it's like you're high.
A better focus?
Yeah, yeah. And you calm yourself. When you find your peace, because that's what ultimately we all try and do, right? When we drink or whatever, you try and find your happiness, your peace. But I've always felt that alcohol at some point takes you beyond your peace, you know, and you have no control. With weed, if you think the right thoughts, it'll be one of the best highs because you're enjoying your inner peace. And with alcohol, it's like, it's a very aggressive, depending on how much you drink, it's a very, like, you end up like getting aggressive, like it's something you can't control. I always,
yeah, it's way off the rails, man, you know?
Yeah.
You know what we gotta do is, Frankie and I get you to take a month off vacation so we can do some weed. You know what I mean? So they don't drug test us.
Do some weed. Yeah, because I've never done weed, man.
Really,
you know?
Dude,
I just drank forever, you know?
Well, there's two strands of weed. There's indica and there's sativa. So if you're already a hyper person, then don't smoke sativa because it's like drinking coffee. And it's more of a head high. Like, it makes you think. It makes you verbal. It makes you creative. Like, I'll get high and listen to my stand-up and be like, okay. And I enjoy myself. It's like stepping outside of yourself and being the observer, you know?
Yes.
But there's indica, too, which is a body high. It relaxes you. That's the weed you want to smoke before you go to sleep. You don't get sleepy right away, but eventually you'll start to feel it. And then there's hybrid, which is if it's an indica dominant, then it's more of the sleepy. If it's a sativa dominant, then it's more of the hyper stuff. So with hybrids, you don't know
what's going
to happen. Mm-hmm. So, but hybrids, most of the time, are just the middle of both. So it all depends on your personality. Like me, I'm a hyper person already. So when I smoke sativas, I'm just like all over the corpse.
Yeah, I'm a hyper guy too. I like, you know, sleep 3 to 4 hours a day, you know?
Yeah. So you want indica.
So slow me down a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And then you relax, you enjoy the heaviness, and then you just knock out. You eat and knock out. And that's what's safe about weed. Like, I met some dude at a bus stop one time and I was smoking. It was a guy from Afghanistan and he's like, oh, you know, he's like, what are you smoking? And I was like, oh, I'm smoking weed. He's like, oh, that's good, man. That's good. Weed makes sense because you'll smoke and you eat. And he's like, and that's what your body is supposed to do. It's supposed to eat. And then I was like, well, what drug do you use? He's like, I do heroin.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, shit. Like, and he's like, yeah, you're going to cardiac arrest, you know? So ultimately, weed is the most safest drug you could use. I mean, and, you know, people always say weed makes you lazy. It doesn't. Like, weed either brings out the good in you or it brings out the
worst in you.
Yeah, the lazy in you. Because a lot of people get high and be happy with the high and don't want to do other shit in their life. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to live with
with a ex-alcoholic, clean and sober for 3 years. And, you know, I have a job. I do Lyft. I do my stand-up. Like I said, I help that lady move. Wherever there's money to be made, I'm going to make it, because fuck it, you know? Like, that's how you survive out here. This guy, he needed help, and I came in at the right time. But whenever I would come to his home, he would treat my smoking weed a few times like this fucking addiction, like I was selling his VCR or some shit. And I always got offended when he would call me a druggie, because I was like, I'm not a druggie, dude. Like, a druggie wouldn't have a job. A druggie wouldn't go chase his fucking career.
Go forward.
Yeah, man. So that's what I'm saying. Like, alcohol is still affecting this person. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it's like, he stopped drinking and was still a negative person. So what I'm saying is, alcohol doesn't make you a negative person. It already has to be in you. So yes. You know what I'm saying? So it's gonna, like,
enhance with who you are already.
Exactly. It's like, so you're either only drinking a little bit to be happy, or you're fucking. That's the dangerous part about alcohol. You know, you can know your limit, but there could also be that fucking moment where you're
like, you catapulted into crazy.
Yeah, you drank more than you needed to, because it's liquid, so you're just like, it's not smoke. With smoke, you kind of get tired of it, like, I'm good.
No, you know what? And I met a lot of angry alcoholics, mm-hmm. where they're like normal people. They drink and they want to fight, yeah. and fight. I mean, like, you're like, dude, like, what the hell's wrong with you, you know?
Yeah.
But like you said, man, like, brings out the inside of them out, you know?
Yeah, and I always felt, you know, it was a little more dangerous. I mean, especially when you drive, you know? Another dangerous thing about weed that I learned is you can't always smoke with just anybody. Like, because they might lace their weed, and you might not even know that. You're just like, oh, should I smoke weed?
Yes.
You hit the wrong shit, and you could be gone. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you also have to be safe when it comes to weed. I'm not saying that it's the perfect drug. I'm just saying my experience with it was me dealing with myself. I dealt with my dark side. I dealt with my positive side.
Yes.
And it was a battle. And it wasn't the weed that was making me do that. That was who I already was. I was just facing myself. So now that I'm older, I recognize what I need to fix. As a kid, I always say I was just doing it because I was always laughing, and, you know, and maybe my issues got in the way in there. Mm. But I never got into alcohol because I saw my dad fucking just not be the dad that he was supposed to because of alcohol.
Yes.
That'll
do it, man.
That's why the name of the show is No Father, No Problem. Mm-hmm. You don't got a father here.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, we could blame our parents, but in reality, like, at 16, I was like, I got nothing, so let me go fucking create something.
You do know it yourself, you know?
That is fucking words right there, dude. I have nothing, so let me go create something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is a joke. Fucking, we need to get a bumper sticker that says that.
Yeah.
No shit.
I got nothing, so I'm gonna go create something. And yeah. I'm gonna steal that from you, right, Doug?
Dude, yeah. Like Forrest Gump, dude. Fucking the wipe your face and it's.
Yeah, no,
there you go. I got nothing, so let me go create something.
And one of the reasons we wanted this, the name for the podcast, that mm-hmm. as it is because so many people blame their parents for who they are.
Yeah.
But once you know who you are, it's all on you, you know?
Yeah. Well, once you realize that you could do something about your situation, then you do it. Like, I found that out at 16, and I was making money that I could have been making at a regular job. So. Yes. My transition into having a job now, it's kind of like, fuck, dude, this is not who I am. I'm just here to survive. I'm a fucking comedian, right? So it's just like, but I remember my grandma, when we were in Mexico, she would always be like, encuéntrate un trabajo para que te hagas hombre. And now I understand what she meant, because now you realize, like, fuck, I really, really do need to put in effort. If not, and I'm just gonna be working at some fucking whack ass job. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, and I also learned my work ethic at work is the same work ethic that I'm gonna have in my comedy. So I best work hard here, so the same habits carry over.
So you do the best on your comedy.
You know what I mean? And eventually, all the hard work that I'm doing over here, because I'm learning it here, it's gonna take off, and then I could just be like,
just catapult you to the next level.
Yeah, and I don't need this job no more. You know what I mean? Yes. So it's like, I'm just accepting my situation, and that's all it is. Like not having a father, it did give me a lot of doubts about me as a man, me towards women. I was real insecure. You know, we didn't have love from our dad, and he, you know, he's never told us he loved us, and that shit affected us. And yeah, you know, it gets us teary eyed, but I just learned, like, you know what? Maybe they were going through their own shit that we don't know.
That right? They couldn't overcome.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Because in Mexican families, your family doesn't be like, hey, let's take them to therapy. Yeah. Like with us, it's kind of like, oh, who gives a shit? We fucking suffer. You suffer too. Right?
The main phrase is, man up, you know?
Well, yeah.
Or hack it, you know? Like, we don't want to hear your whatever.
Aguantate.
Yeah, aguantate and move forward, you know?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's why I feel a lot of Mexicans, we're very resentful because of that. Because there's a lot of things that our parents kind of asked us to put aside our feelings because we all suffered. We all struggled. We all fucking...
Yes.
Right? I always felt like Mexican parents always threw in their struggle in your life to make you feel guilty. And you can, you know, but it's a good thing because it kind of it humbled you. But at the same time, like, think about how white parents would react to their kids struggling. Like, and I understand, because white people have had more generations in America than some Mexicans. Mexicans were only like 3, 4, 5 generations in, right? I'm one. So that means I'm more Mexico than I am American.
Yes.
And with white people, obviously they learn from their grandparents, their great-great-grandparents, how to collect, like, how to, you know, have credit, all that shit. We don't start learning that until the second, third generation.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So our parents didn't have a plan. Dude, their fucking plan was just to cross the border and get here, right?
And get better, you know?
Yeah.
Cross the border, feed us, and that's all it was.
Yeah. Know? It was like work, right?
And everything else was us for us to learn, you know? And, like, I'll give you an example. I remember when I first bought my house. Mm-hmm. I bought my first house, and I told my friends, I go, hey, man, I bought a house. And then people, friends that knew me, they're like, fuck, if that dude can buy a house, I can buy a house. So you start a chain reaction mm-hmm. of people who fucking realize, oh, I can do it too. And, you know, you start that because it's something you don't know you can do.
Until you
because
do.
It's not in you.
Yeah.
White people, they're like, okay, well, I'm growing up, I'm going to go to college, and then when I go to college, I'm going to buy a house, and I'm going to have a, you know. That's in their DNA. That's who they are. For us, it's, you know,
like, we didn't learn that many options.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we're not, like, our parents don't teach us you have options. They're just like, no, this is how we did it, so this is how you, like, it's the same. Like, but when there's another train over here, you're just like, no, but this one's moving faster, because
they're usually on survival mode.
Yeah.
It's usually like my goal is, you know, back then their goal was, I hope you know, like, you always hear, like, oh, your grandma had 19 kids, 12 of them survived. You know, you're like, what the fuck are they, 12 of them survived? That's a fucking, like,
a litter?
That's a bad ratio, yeah.
That's a 78% of fucking survival ratio. That's fucking, that's nuts. He goes, yeah, you know, 78%. I go, what happened to the rest of them? Oh, one of them was small, you know. And it's a whole different. So when they come over here, they're like, okay, I just want to make sure that you're still alive. Like, no, hold on, we're in the States. Survival is not an issue. It's not an issue. Over here, it's a whole different game plan. You know, we're going to live here. We're going to stay alive. You know, we got to worry about credit score. We got to worry about being homeowners and going to college. But they don't know that because they're from old school. They're like, your life, oh, I'm done. Yeah, like you say, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And
it's different times for different places, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's It's what we live in right now, you know?
So, yeah. And I mean, my suggestion is whatever your parents did, just forgive them, because you have the power to become whatever you want to become. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what, Juan? There's a thing that, you know, before we end the podcast, we'll get into that. There's a thing that my wife and I, we do is, I tell her, I go, you know what? You and I, we're Mexican, and we come from Mexican upbringing. And whenever, like I'll give you guys a little scenario. My kids walk in the kitchen, and they're barefoot, and I get upset. Hey, go fucking put your shoes on. Go put your pantuflas on or something, you know?
Yeah.
Go put them on. And I get really upset. And my wife's like, what do you do? He goes, I don't want them to get sick. He's saying, she's like, don't worry, they're fine. They're not going to get sick because they're not wearing shoes. And I realize that's true. But because my whole life they told me, put your shoes on, because if your feet get cold, you're going to get sick. That was back in Mexico, you know?
Yeah.
Growing up as an adult, that's not true. So I told my wife, I go, I know you and I have father issues, daddy issues, stuff that is in us from growing up. But when we get older, if they ever ask us, like, they ever ask me a question, hey, what do you think about this? I want you to do the math, come up with a solution by yourself, and disregard everything you learned in the past. Because all Mexicans always go back to their upbringing, makes no sense because we're in a different country.
Yeah.
You know. So I go, do you really think that they're getting sick because their shoes are off? I go, you know what? You're right. They're not. But I say that because that's the way I was brought up.
Yeah.
I have to disregard that. Like, you know what, kids? It's okay if you do it. I would prefer if you wore shoes.
Yeah.
But it's okay if you do it, you know? So always come up with your own solutions. Don't use anything your parents taught you, because what they taught you was from Mexico.
Yeah, might not be for you.
It won't apply. Yeah. It doesn't apply nowadays, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because it's the truth. Like, my dad, he was the type of person that never liked change. My mom liked change, but she never sustained a relationship. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, it is my parents. And, like, my relationship with my dad is like we're friends. Well, because he was never there for me in the hardest moments of my life. So I just kind of feel like, dude, I dealt with that shit, you know? You didn't teach me how to deal with that. And I don't hold that against him, because I go over and visit him and we talk, you know? But it's like I just learned, like, I'm my own man. And everything that I've created, maybe, yes, like you said, I'm like my dad in terms that I have never seeked more than that apartment that he lives in, but now I'm getting out of that.
Out of that shell. No?
Yeah, because that's what I saw. My parents didn't teach me to have more. My mom wanted that, but my dad didn't. So I got two different lessons that probably weren't going to be good for me. My dad's athletic, so I got the athletic ability from him. My mom's funny and she's very hardworking, so I got good things from both of my parents, even though it wasn't the best relationship.
Yes.
So you do pick up strengths, you know what I'm saying? Obviously you picked up being caring towards your kids, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I think that the way you were expressing it was maybe the same vibration your parents gave you. And it comes out like too much, but when you fixed it, it's almost like I would prefer, right? So now you're like more like I care, but like you're not gonna be exactly like your parents.
You try to do give the same compassion, but in a more modern way, something that applies to these days. You know what I mean? Because things have changed. You know.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Like with my girlfriend's kids, like the love that my dad didn't give me comes out of me, because I'm like, this is what I wanted to connect with. So when I see them, I see me and I see myself, because I learned how to give myself my own confidence. You know what I mean? I'm the one that went to Venice Beach and played with big black guys. I did that. my, you know what I'm saying? And I found that on my own. You know, my brother's a doctor in education. My sister graduated from the University of San Francisco. So they didn't blame my parents. And yes. Look at where they're at, right?
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, my sister was independent right after high school. Who taught her that? My mom. So obviously she got strength from my mom. So you do get strength. It's just maybe the way they dealt with things.
That's how you got to manage the most, right?
Yeah. Like, we get used to dealing with things like that. You know what I mean?
You don't see stuff like that and then use that as an excuse as failure. Like, oh, why didn't you make it? Oh, because my dad wasn't there, so that's why I didn't make it. No, you don't use excuses like that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that explains a lot, you know? That helps a lot. Yeah. So, you know what, Juan? Thank you very much. Hey, brother, it was deep. It was deep and funny and a little. We hit all grounds, dog. You know, we hit all grounds. And, you know, thank you for coming down and you know what we'll say? Thank you for coming down and slumming it with the little guys. You know what I mean?
Ah,
like
dude.
I said, you're podcasting 12. Yeah, you're number 11,
just,
right?
Hey, just make it interesting, everyone, and you got and just have fun, guys. Like,
you know, that's what we try to do. And, you know, like I say, you know, look around. We're in my garage. Is fucking my wife's like, hey, I want to park inside. I go, shut up. You're going to be us.
Yeah.
He was alone.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in a garage, but it's in a, dude, if they only knew where the neighborhood was, you know.
Hey,
I mean?
Hey, bro. Relax.
I know. I'm not going to tell exactly, people. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Hey, and then some, you know, the old hood, man.
I didn't say that. Fuck it.
Hey, we're celebrity. This game's really ghetto, right?
Yeah.
You know what the truth? Well, what it is when we speak about, you know, where we're from. We're from East LA. It's another story to tell, you know. But it's kind of hard to say, oh, we're from East LA. It was rough, but you know, things have changed. We've gone different places. Yeah. That's why, you know, hey, it's not bad right now. We're at, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I saw right now when you parked, you left your windows down. You're like, hey, no one's gonna steal my radio.
I did.
You know what, dude? If you leave your windows down, they'll put a radio in your car, dog.
They give you an upgrade.
They give you an upgrade. They're like, what the hell is put an Alpine in there?
That's funny. Yeah.
Hey, Juan, thank you very much for joining us, brother. Hey, otra vez. And, so we're another episode of No Father, No Problem. Frankie?
Yes, thanks for listening, guys.
Hey, and next week, hopefully, we'll come by with some more guests. And
don't blame your parents.
Yeah, don't blame your parents, because you know what?
It's all on you, man.
It's all on you. And blame your parents is... you know what though? Hold on. If you blame your parents, hey, call us up and join in one of our episodes. You know what I mean?
That's yeah.
Exactly what we're about.
If you have problems with your parents, these guys are perfect. I think they're
get you over the hump, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's all on you, man. Yeah. We're out, guys. Peace.